Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. According to industry analysts, the video gaming or interactive entertainment industry is poised to break $100 billion in sales this year and has been experiencing 7 to 9% growth for about the last decade. Beginning with arcade games, the industry has spread to video consoles, PC games, mobile games, and apps for phones and tablets, and are poised to move into virtual reality and more. Now, for years, the industry was focused in Silicon Valley, but today the industry is highly decentralized with game developers and companies right here in Tulsa and Oklahoma City. The University of Tulsa has recently developed a gaming degree in computer science to supply the industry with employees and are working to encourage a new generation with their Heartland Gaming Expo, which will draw over 50 teams from elementary age to semi-professionals demonstrating and competing with their new games. It's one of the largest STEM events in the area. A code jam competition where teams are given a theme last weekend. They'll have a week to build a game from scratch and demonstrate it at the expo. Tutorials, speakers, and demonstrations of future technology are all a part of this event, which takes place this Saturday and Sunday at the Reynolds Center. My guest today is Roger Mailer, Associate Professor of Computer Science at the University of Tulsa and the founder of the Heartland Gaming Expo, and he also puts the event together each year. And he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Roger Mailer, welcome back to Studio Tulsa, and congratulations to the Heartland Gaming Expo coming up this weekend.
Well, thanks for having me back.
Yeah. You know, gaming is a huge, huge industry, and it's just growing larger and larger. I know as part of the University of Tulsa, you're now turning out people with degrees in gaming and how to work in the industry. How's that working out for Tulsa?
Oh, I think it's working really well, particularly at the university. We saw growth of the major went from zero to over 30 majors in just the first 2 years, which is explosive growth as far as we're concerned. We're expecting to see probably another growth this coming fall. As far as the local Tulsa area is concerned, we're filling a need. There are lots of simulation companies that are around, like SimStar and Flight Safety, that are always looking for high-quality employees, as well as game companies that are starting off. And they're looking for people to come in and know how to do what they need to know how to do.
How big is the gaming industry now? I mean, it's multi-billion dollars, but I would think with mobile devices and some of the new... Well, there's probably things I don't even know about that are happening. I would think that this is like explosive growth.
It has grown very quickly. So it started out, and you can sort of measure the progression of the PC sales along with the gaming industry. They've been very strongly tied together. But now what we see is that it's splitting off, and you have mobile devices like tablets and cell phones, and a lot of companies are starting up. And so right now, it's larger than the movie industry, the entire film industry, what you see in gaming. And you have a lot of little programming shops that are spread out all over the country. So it's not like everything's located in Hollywood.
Right? Or in Silicon Valley.
Or in Silicon Valley.
Now, you mentioned the desk unit, the PC desks unit. I mean, that's not really a growth industry anymore. I mean, most people are going to laptops or tablets or smaller devices. And even console sales, like, your PlayStations and things like that. Has that growth leveled off at all, or is that still continuing to grow?
I think in some of the console arena, it's leveled off.
Like Nintendo is kind of...
Well, they just released the Switch. And the Switch has been a huge seller for them, and I think it will continue to be a huge seller because what they've done is they merged the console, what was traditionally the home console, with a handheld device. And so you can take your console game and go to your friend's house and play it there with them. And I think that was a very smart move on their part. In the PC market, the PCs are the most powerful platform for games. So all of the real innovation, the big what are called AAA games, that's where they're being produced is for that platform. But now we're starting to see the growth of things like augmented reality and virtual reality. So we actually will have a mobile VR truck this weekend at the Heartland. And they have some HTC Vibes, and they have special chairs that you can sit in.
They're getting into nomenclature. You're losing me. So this is basically you sit in a chair, and you're sort of immersed into a reality?
Yeah, they basically put a screen right on your face, and you are completely...
Just as you're seeing in the Samsung commercials.
Right,
and the like.
Right. Mm-hmm. You're completely engrossed and encapsulated in that environment, and then the chair actually can respond to what you're seeing. So it can turn you left or right or go up or down or tilt you, based on what is being displayed in your eyes. So it's an immersive experience, virtual reality. We also are now seeing augmented reality. This is largely centered over Microsoft's HoloLens being released in development, where you walk around with a device on your head and it projects holograms into your environment. So, and you can interact with these holograms.
How interesting. You're walking around.
It's a head-based unit. You put it on. All of the processors, the batteries, everything is encapsulated in this unit. There are no cables. There are no chairs. And you experience your world like you normally do, except for it's your world plus whatever else you put in it. You can do things like project televisions onto walls. And this device remembers where you put things. So if, when you come back into the room, it'll say, oh, I know this room. There should be a television on that wall. There should be a little dog that's following you around when you're in this room. And that's how that device works.
Now, when we had the Pokemon app, you know, you had people walking around the streets, literally looking at their screens into the street, walking into things while they were looking for this Pokemon app. Are we likely to see people walking down the street with this device at some point?
I think the HoloLens has a little ways to go.
Yeah.
Like most new technologies, I think they're going to have to shrink it down just a little bit to make it more useful. And then I do think we're going to see these all over. And I think we're going to see changes in the way things like even retail stores are functioning based on these devices being available to you.
Could you see like a retail store that's virtual, basically?
We could see entire virtual stores. We could see stores where you walk in and maybe they don't have a lot of selection on stock in stores, but that the augmented features allow you to actually look what's available online. So, you know, we've talked to Walmart, for instance, and Walmart is very excited about the idea of moving towards augmenting their stores.
So you go into a department store, you're always looking for the garment that's in your size. They have samples that are there. They may have a cut of the material in your size, and then you custom make the rest of the the color, the details of, say, the shirt or a suit, and it comes to you?
Well, possibly. Yeah. But really mixing the online world with our real world. So when you go into Walmart, you may see three televisions up on the wall display, but none of them are exactly what you're looking for. And so you, through augmented reality, would be able to say, what else do they have? Order it right there standing in the store. And so it kind of mixes that online experience with your world, real world experience. What I think is probably going to be the real things is augmented presence.
So what is augmented presence?
Now when you go to the local store and you're trying to decide what type of cheese that your spouse is looking for, your spouse will be standing next to you in augmented presence and say, look, that's the cheese that I want, so you don't get it wrong.
Yeah, don't get the Campbell soup, get the Progresso.
Exactly, exactly.
How bizarre. That is a crazy world you're talking about. How many years down the road do you think that is? I mean, given the pace of the acceleration of technology, this sounds like something you would be talking decades from now, and it could probably be as soon as 5 or 10 years.
Well, you know, I'm always terrified about making projections on these things.
Yeah.
I go back to when the IBM CEO said that the world will only need 4 computers ever, and I think that was a massive fail. Or when they then turned around and said that the PC market will never take off,
right. Massive
fail. But I would project we're going to see within 5 to 10 years that people are walking around with Google Glass-like devices or HoloLens devices, and it will become very normal. Even in classrooms, you'll be sitting in the classroom and you'll have things projected up to you that the instructors want you to see.
Now, well, the Heartland, you mentioned the Heartland Gaming Expo will have a virtual reality. Will they have this augmented reality, a sample demonstrator of that?
Well, we have one HoloLens in our department. They're quite expensive. They're about $3,000 to get a HoloLens right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it will probably be on display. What I mean by display is you'll be able to come over and try it out. I know a number of the entries, competitor entries this year, are based on either augmented or virtual reality. So the competitors are recognizing that that's the future. That's where they need to go. So we won't be playing Pokemon on our phones for long. They may actually be useful as phones again.
Ah.
Right? So we'll be playing Pokemon using our HoloLens.
Yeah. And this is like a something like a Google Glass or a pair of glasses or goggles? Or
yeah, it's pretty large. It wraps around your head and it has a pair of glasses that come in front of your eyes and it projects right into your eyes, but you can see through the main lens on it, which I think is that's the best thing.
So you see your surroundings.
Yeah, you're not going to run into the wall when you're using it, unless you run into the wall like I do just randomly.
Right. You know. My guest today is Roger Mailer. He's an associate professor of computer science at the University of Tulsa, and he's also the founder and runs the Heartland Gaming Expo, which is one of the bigger STEM events in the state. You're going to have all sorts of student teams coming in, and they're designing games?
Yeah, so I think we're up to, last time I looked, something like 55 different teams were coming, and they range in age from fourth graders all the way up to semi-professional or professional developers that are local. So we're looking at about 250 people that are coming.
And they'll be demonstrating their games? Or will there actually be a game build during the...
So this is a hands-on experience. You come and you get to play the games that these people have built. And for instance, we have about 100 elementary school students from Tulsa Public Schools that'll be showing up from six different Tulsa Public Schools. And they're showing games off that they've been working with TU students on this semester to build. So come and sit and play their games and talk to them, and believe me, they will be excited to have the positive feedback. And that's what Heartland's all about, is providing that feedback to these young up-and-coming developers and indie companies.
So at this point, for when you're looking at elementary students or, say, even junior high or high school students, are they putting out what you would say, wow, that looks like a professional game? Or are they still getting sort of the rudiments of game logic and that is a part of their game?
So when we started working with elementary school students, we had, I would say, low expectations for what they could produce, and they blew us away. I mean, honestly, the quality of the art that some of these students were producing was outstanding, and it's these students that were trying to keep them interested in pursuing that and then eventually maybe working in the gaming industry or working towards some other types of STEM degree. They're very, very smart. They've been working with code.org, and a lot of them have learned the basics of programming structure. And so putting them in where we give them an actual project has just, it's lit them up. I mean, they're so excited.
Mm-hmm. So they're demonstrating their games that we're going to see. Are they going to be 80s graphics, 90s graphics, or like 2010 or 2015 or 16 graphics?
It varies. So some of them are going to be side-scrollers like Super Mario Brothers used to be. Uh-huh. Some of them are three-dimensional games that are built using the Unity engine, which it makes sense given that we have a Unity developer as our keynote this year. So
You'll have to explain Unity developer to me and probably most of the audience.
Sure. So modern games are often built on what's referred to as a game engine, and it handles a lot of the kind of middle steps of making a game, and it allows developers to focus on the content of the game, like what do the characters look like and how do they move?
The story of the game.
The storyline, right? So we as developers now are focusing mostly on that. Then there's a set of people who build the tools that we use, and one of them being a game engine, Unity being probably the most popular on the planet right now.
Now tell us about your keynote speaker.
So our keynote speaker this year is Niklas Smedberg. He goes by Smedis. I'm not quite clear that Smedis is any better than Niklas or Smedberg, but it's his choice, I guess. So Smedis is
a handle.
Yeah, it is a handle. And so people know him as Smedis in the development community. He is the principal graphics engineer for Unity in their Emerging Technologies division, which is a complicated way to say he is the guy that gets to decide what new features get added to Unity for the next generation of games that are going to come out.
Hmm. And so what is he working on? I mean, what's sort of the...
He's keeping that a secret from me even. So I was asking him, so what exactly are you going to talk about? He's, well, I think I'm going to talk about what it was like to get into the gaming industry and then some of the things we're doing at Unity. And so I kind of poked him a little and said, well, what sort of things are happened at Unity? And he said, well, you're going to have to listen to my talk.
Well, you wouldn't invite him unless you had some idea. So what's impressed you about that particular group?
Unity has done such a great job in making game development easy. And a lot of these, I mentioned, smaller shops that are starting up all over the country, they use that technology and it gives them the jumpstart they need.
Sort of a basic platform then for a lot of games.
So you build a game and then you can make it for the PC, and then you can just deploy it also as an app for in iOS for an iPhone. So it allows rapid game development, and it does not take super programming skills in order to be able to do it. And I think there are going to be all kinds of crazy new things in that rendering engine that are going to come out in the next few years. And I think a big portion of that is going to be towards the VR, AR realm, where they're improving it for those platforms.
Hmm. What about the future of, you know, anytime I'm at a gathering where there's some downtime, everybody's on their phones and they're playing either some sort of game, or is that the future, or do you think that's going to phase out? You mentioned something earlier about, you know, well, we'll use our phones as phones again.
Yeah, I think the phone phase is going to start to dwindle a little bit. There'll still be people who will play them. I mean, I play games. I think you sit with me at lunch and you see I pull my phone out and play games at lunch.
Yeah.
I call that research, given my job, but most people would call that playing games. So I think that will still stay around because not everyone's going to immediately jump on the augmented reality. And then like most new technologies, it'll take a while for the laws to catch up. So you'll see people driving down the streets of Tulsa with AR devices on their head, and they're clicking things that don't exist instead of paying attention to what they're doing. You may see that AR technology starts getting incorporated in the cars as a form of like heads-up display. A lot of new vehicles are now having displays where they show maps and traffic conditions, and they're demanding more and more of your attention, getting your eyes off the road. With augmented reality devices, just like with fighter pilots have, you'll be able to see this information in front of you, and your eyes never have to leave the road, and you'll be able to interact with it. And I think that's a big push coming up.
Everybody's talking about the cars that have driving capabilities, the Google cars and the like. How do you think that's going to work?
I don't know. I'm terrified of them. I think if they come out, the technology is going to be really solid, in particularly to the response of, like, I'm terrified by them. The idea that you're handing over control to this piece of software, which was developed by people that you don't know.
That has rationale, a rational response at its heart, given that most people are irrational on the road.
Well, and there's a compelling demonstration that I saw, which was done by Dr. Rose Gamble and Dr. Jeremy Daly, and they had taken a car which had auto stop technology. And they put a truck up in front, and then this car, which I think was like a Honda Civic or something, on a cable system. And so they pulled the cable and the Honda Civic, you know, immediately screeched to a stop and it didn't hit the back of the truck. But what the system didn't realize is there was another truck coming behind it at full speed and squished the Honda Civic into a thumbtack. And so there's definitely some added rationality. Maybe if a driver had been driving it, they would have been looking in that rearview mirror to see what was coming behind them. So they may have swerved instead of, used their brake. So I think there's definitely strange situations that you could put a vehicle in, hit a pedestrian or hit another car, right? Mm. So that is a rational decision making that, you know, has all kinds of moral and ethical implications that I don't know that technology's developed for yet.
My guest today is Roger Mailer, Associate Professor of Computer Science at the University of Tulsa and the person behind the Heartland Gaming Expo, which takes place this Saturday and Sunday at the Rental Center. There'll be 50 or more teams competing. So tell us about this competition. I mean, what actually happens? Is people going to the expo vote on it, or is it a group of high exalted computer science professors decide who wins? What exactly happens?
It's actually a little bit of both.
Yeah.
So we have three major categories at the Heartland. One of them is the game showcase, and this is where teams that have already developed games will show off their games, and we'll have judges that will come around and look at their games and score them on various criteria. Then we have the gallery show, and the gallery show focuses mostly on game concepts or artwork in games where they're not in completed games. So encouraging people to show some love to the artists who typically, like, you look at the art and you say, oh, wow, it looks visually stunning, but you always think about the programmer, right? And so here we want people to remember that the artists, the sound designers, the people that are composing the music, which is often nobody looks at it, right? It's underlooked, but it sets the mood and the pace and the tempo. And if you've ever played a game, You can turn off the volume and play the game, and it's a completely flat experience without sound and music. So, you know, that's what the galleries show. Again, we have judges that walk around and do criteria, judge them on various criteria. And then finally, we have the Code Jam. The Code Jam is this year is a 168-hour competition. So last Saturday, we announced the theme for the Code Jam at 9 a.m. in the morning. And then 9 a.m. on this coming Saturday, they show up with the games that they produced based on the theme that we've announced.
Can you tell us what the theme is?
Well, it's a real mind bender this year. The theme is it's a feature, not a bug. So it's kind of
it sounds like an inside joke.
It is a little bit of an inside joke in computer science. So when a student, for instance, will turn in a program and there's some kind of problem with the program, they'll often claim that
it's a feature, not a flaw.
It's not a flaw, right? It's oh, I meant to do that, you know,
right.
Kind of the Pee Wee Herman response. Oh, I meant to do that.
Right.
So we decided that it might be fun to see what a game producer could produce if they were purposely putting in weird behavior. And that was kind of the concept. And it was inspired by April Fool's Day, which was last Saturday. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to be cliche and say April Fool's Day. So we picked, it's a feature, not a bug. And we've gotten very positive feedback from the teams that are on it. I probably am somewhat butchering the quote by Matt Harmon, who is a local game developer for Bonozo Apps. He owns the company. And he said, this is by far the best game jam theme of all time ever. So I think because most themes restrict what you're doing, restrict what you think, whereas this is meant to really open up, like thinking of alternate ways of doing things that are
right.
bizarre.
The creative mistake in a way.
Yeah. And one of the problems that some of the teams have come back with is that the statement itself is a paradox, right? So the apps.
If you're trying to create a flaw, then is it a flaw if
exactly,
you create it?
Exactly. So we've created this really odd paradox, very similar to the statement of me saying this statement is a lie, right? It's a logical paradox. And so a lot of the teams that I've talked to, they said it took us about 3 hours to even wrap our head around how we could deal with this paradox. I like themes that make people think and make them think outside the box. And this one was a real winner this year.
So if people are thinking about going to the Heartland Gaming Expo, it takes place Saturday and Sunday at the Reynolds Center on the University of Tulsa campus. And you'll have all these student teams from elementary school through high school to, you mentioned, graduates of college and sort of semi-professional or categories producing games for people to actually look at, play. When you have a professional organizations bringing in some of their latest games as well?
You know, Microsoft's going to be there, and they're going to be showing off some of their technology, and they're going to be teaching some tutorials. So we don't just show off games that have been made. The Heartland has a lot of different things that are going on. We have 4 tutorials. This will teach people the basics of making their own game, whether it's just producing art that is then incorporated into a game or laying out a basic level in Unity or Game Maker Pro. So we really want to encourage people to look at this if it's their passion.
And when you talk about this, you know, 30 years ago, to make a film, you had to have professional equipment. You had to have professional backing. Now, with the democratization, if you will, of the film industry, anybody can make a film. Is it the same truth for making a video game?
Well, absolutely. And
anybody can make it.
Anyone can make it. And what's happened is it's largely moved away from these large production studios. And a couple years ago, when we were at the Cox Business Center, kind of the underlying theme was that we didn't need to have these huge publishers backing the creation of games. And one of our keynote speakers, Eric Peterson, has shown that, has demonstrated that repeatedly. So he was largely involved in the success of Cloud Imperium and getting, I think they're up to something like $700 million or some ridiculous number like that in funding that was all crowdsourced. Mm. And then he turned around right before Heartland 2 years ago and got $700,000 in crowdsourcing to start up a new gaming project of his own. So you can see through crowdsourcing, you can see that the overhead for getting into gaming industry is been reduced. People can produce apps like Flappy Birds. Do you remember Flappy Birds?
Sort of.
Yeah, so it was just a developer, some young man in Vietnam decided he wanted to make this game, and it was kind of a total ripoff of a bunch of other games, and he used graphics from other games without permission. But it went out there, and it was explosive in how well it was received. And he made millions of dollars on the sales of this and then immediately took it off because the companies that he
had stolen all
the, yeah, were suing him. But the idea that the overhead for getting into the game industry has been reduced so substantially, if you're building games that are simple apps, the AAA studios, it's still multi-million dollars to produce the games that they're producing.
And just like a big motion picture, like a super action adventure picture that costs hundreds of millions, you never know if it's going to be a success. It's a big gamble.
Well, it's a big gamble. And, you know, the gaming industry has gambles too. Clearly, there's been games that have been put out there that have costed millions of dollars to produce and then turn around and don't make very much money. They're not well received. Some of them, it's that the developers are focusing on introducing some really clever new technology. And an example of this was a game called Spore. And Spore introduced this brand new animation technology. Now, as a developer myself, I recognized the importance of that and how awesome it was and how successful. But the game did not do particularly well. The main gameplay was depleted because they had spent so much time building this new technology.
And probably other people exploited it to make better games.
Well, and it's become kind of the industry standard now when mm-hmm. you see these new games. It's called procedural animation, where you're using physics and physics characteristics to produce the movement of a character. Most games, when you see somebody walk, that's essentially like a little movie of them walking.
Right.
And they just play it at the right time and the right speed to get the character to look like it's walking. With procedural animation, it calculates the forces of the muscles and the angles and things like that. So it's much more accurate to the way somebody would walk up a hill or walk through water. With canned animations, you can't do that, right? If they walk through water, it looks like the same as they walking through land. And we know walking through water and walking on ground is completely different in how it affects your body.
Yeah. And it sounds like even if you're not a hardcore gamer, there's going to be just the technology involved with this event is going to be kind of interesting.
It's just going to be fun. And we have a lot of other events, like I was saying, mm-hmm. the tutorial sessions. If you just want to start learning how to build games, coming and listening to the keynote speaker, that's going to be an interesting thing. But you know, we like to make it a fun event, and it's actually coinciding this year with the spring TU football game. So outdoors, we'll have activities. We have a number of food trucks that are coming in, which are also always a Tulsa favorite. We have two game trucks that are coming in. I mentioned the mobile VR truck. We have Bad Wolf Ops is bringing a laser tag setup. So we're going to have outdoor laser tag.
Yeah.
And then a group called Dystopia Rising is going to be doing LARPing. So, and that's going to be pretty fun to watch, I think.
All right. Well, it sounds like if you know somebody who's interested in gaming, this is the place to be this weekend.
I don't think there's anywhere else you should be for anything.
Heartland Gaming Expo going on this weekend. A lot of Tulsa companies involved. This, and I assume Tulsa is no different than just about any other community where there's a large pool of computer science graduates. This has all become decentralized, and people are building games all over the country now, right?
Yeah, so like I mentioned Bonozo Apps, for instance, mm-hmm. in Tulsa. There's also a company called Steely House. I know 36 Degrees North has currently got a number of small startup game companies. We know of game companies that function in Bartlesville. There's quite a few of them down in Oklahoma City. So we're definitely seeing the growth of tech here in Tulsa, and this part of our goal of this event is to promote that concept, to move that forward.
All right. Well, Roger, thanks very much for joining us.
All right. Thank you.
Roger Mailer is an associate professor of computer science at the University of Tulsa and the principal behind the Heartland Gaming Expo, which takes place this Saturday and Sunday at the Reynolds Center. For more information, visit heartlandgamingexpo.com. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own, do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.